very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King, 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 king now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am one,
but
your fingers or your
tongue.
I am
the king.
I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Job Freer Podcast. My name is Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me, as always, is somebody who's going south. It's Catfish. Catfish, how you doing?
Yeah, that is the way to go. Darling, it's better downwards, wetter. That is a line straight.
Yes?
Straight from my favorite Disney movie.
It's a little the
mermaid.
Little mermaid. That's correct. Well, Catfish, we are reviewing Game of Thrones Season 7, Episode 2, Stormborn.
Woo! Man, and if you want to hit me up about something about Episode 2, you can always hit me up at CJGman67 on Twitter. Oh, Bubba,
yeah?
What an episode we had tonight. Since we usually talk about it briefly before we go into it, do you want to give your rating?
I kind of do, but I feel like I should go after you, though, Catfish, because I feel like my rating might set you off. So I want to hear, what is your rating out of 10 for Episode 2, Stormborn?
Okay, I'm going to give it 9.5, what I like to call quadruple P's.
Quadruple P's?
Yes. We've been talking about them a lot in the last week, and that, of course, is potential proactive presidential pardons.
Boy, that's so many P's, I may have lost track.
That is quadruple P's.
Well, fair enough. I'm gonna move past the P part of this.
Okay.
And get to the 9.5 out of 10. That's incredible. That is very high. Why did you love this so much?
You know, they're not fooling around anymore. In the past,
who
the writers?
I thought you meant the Iron Islands pirates.
There are people fooling around, but it is not the writers.
Oh, okay.
In seasons past, I feel like it would have been 3 or 4 episodes before the damn birds would have gotten to John about the dragon glass
that Sam mentioned that he was going to send last week. Yeah,
right. And this week also, we thought, okay, how long are you going to motor down south? We were wondering about that. Boom, this episode she hears, she's going back up north. It feels like things are coming together so fast.
Right.
And we had a thrilling battle tonight that really shook up everything. My question for weeks, which has been, I see the storm clouds in your eyes every time I mention it, was about the overpowered dragons.
Right.
We got an answer to that tonight. I feel like, and before I was concerned that Cersei with her 2.5 kingdoms, and you thought it was even less.
Yeah, I would say right now she's about 1 kingdom and a couple of territories that won't attack.
She's got maybe a couple vacation homes
right.
In addition to that. She struck a blow tonight, so she's suddenly been more powered up. I just thought so many things are coming together here
right. That
I was just blown away. Blown away. So what about you, Bubba? What did you give it tonight?
I'm going down. Last week.
Just like Grey Worm.
Just like Grey Worm. That's right. I am. I'm going down. Last week, I really loved it. Gave it an 8. Thought, ooh, this season's just going to go. This episode had some incredible highs that I love. And we're going to get to that moment at Theon at the end. But tied to that, my ranking is 7 triple T's out of 10.
Triple T's?
Well, triple T's, I just mentioned him a second ago, it's Theon turn tails. When Theon turns tails and runs,
yeah,
that was a powerful moment. But
you know,
if I could finish, if we haven't spent much time at all with Theon in this episode, as powerful as that hit me, I wonder if I'd been able to spend any time with Theon. If he had had maybe more than one line of dialogue, I think he actually has in the whole thing, maybe 2. I would have felt it more. And there were just moments in this that even though I'm giving it 7 out of 10, and so there are a lot of good moments, there are moments like in the past, you would never have Sam kind of out of the blue. Oh, yeah, you know this guy with grayscale? I've already read something in a book that tells me how I could possibly cure it.
Well, that's not the worst.
That's a shortcut. That is a shortcut.
The worst is the worst shortcut is Euron showing up with all those ships so quickly. That's the worst.
And I'm
you're just going to have to.
And I'm able to kind of ride with that because we don't know how long it's been between seasons. Admittedly, maybe it's been a long time that Sam has been at the Citadel. Last week's montage implies it was. But it just felt too quick, too clean. And there's something that we don't talk about much, but in this episode, the way these shots are composed, there are a lot of close, tighter shots than we're used to on Game of Thrones. This director is Mark Mylod. And in season 5, he directed episodes 3 and 4, High Sparrow and Sons of the Harpy. I think those are okay episodes that aren't great. In last season, in season 6, he directed episodes 7 and 8. The Broken Man, which featured the return of the Hound. I thought that was pretty darn good. But he also did episode 8, which had Arya's showdown with the Waif. Remember how it's like, Arya, okay, I killed the Waif. Now I'm going home. See you later, Jockin. I didn't think that was especially great. This season, he directed episode 2. He's directing next week's episode 3, The Queen's Justice. And when we get to that, what was generally a pretty good action scene at the end, it was way too quickly cut for my taste. It felt almost like some of these films where they're cutting so fast because they're afraid to let you see the actual action.
Well, I kind of liked it because it was close and disorienting, which is what it must be like to have a fight at sea at night. You know what I mean? Obviously, they want to set it at night. That helps them make it much cheaper.
Right. Yeah.
Makes it much cheaper. Oh my God, the effect of the gangplank coming down, and it looked like a dragon to me, but it really like bit into the deck. It was really, really glorious.
Yeah, there were moments in this that I really like. And there's a feeling I have that maybe this is contributing to me feeling down on it. So many times, my high points, when we were sitting here watching it, I was, you know, pumping my fist, was when, quote-unquote, the bad guys were coming up with ways to even the score. Like when Cersei said, well, dragons are tough, and then they cut over to Qyburn. And I'm like, all right, Qyburn!
You know, my first thought was, I thought he was going to make Franken Mountain Clegane.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to make him fly. And if Qyburn can make him come back from death, he can surely make him fly.
Yeah.
That would have been, frankly, more impressive. I hate to give 10 times, but if he had come up with a way to make the monster formerly known as the Mountain, if he could make him fly, I would have gone completely 10 stars. I disagree with you about Theon because I think we have spent so much time with Theon that we know him. I mean, even
that's
as he,
true. That's
even,
why it was powerful.
Even as he sits there, I mean, you can say he didn't say much, but as Yara and Ilaria are about to get it on and their little flirtation ahead of time, we see how he is still being subjugated. He doesn't need to say a word. I mean, it's his sister and a woman are about to get it on right in front of him. That's how little of a will he has and how little he's thought of. So to me, he got debased again. And so that was enough for me. I thought that scene was real clever to have right before. And I mean, just love Yara. Love Ilaria. Should have known when the two of them got together. I want to say they're both omnisexual, so I guess
it
shouldn't be a surprise. Yeah, all sexes.
Okay, sorry, the way you pronounced it, I'm not sure it's a word.
Okay.
But hey, let's get into the beginning of this podcast. We're going to cover Stormborn in detail, but listeners, there are just a couple announcements I want to make right at the top. This is the last...
Yes?
This is the last, quote-unquote, typical The Joffrey podcast we're going to have for a while.
Okay.
Because with Game of Thrones pushed back so late into the summer, we're actually going on vacation now, Catfish, and we're not going to be together. This is our last chance to really fight about the episode.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, you know what happens is because we make so much money from these episodes,
we're able to go on
really fancy vacations while the shows that we're podcasting about are on. That's how much power we have.
So I'm going to be in Chicago when you're listening to this. I assume the couple days after you've watched this episode, I'll be in Chicago. Then I'm going hometown to the ATL, Atlanta. And so next Sunday night, I'll be hometown ATL. And where will you be next Sunday night, Catfish?
Next Sunday night, I'll be in my hometown. That is Honolulu, Hawaii. And I'm staying through 2 weekends. So I get back super late, even the following, which I think is this August 6th. I'll be back super late. So I don't know if we want to move the podcast to Monday, but whatever, we'll figure that out. So
now,
next week is going to be weird.
When you're in Hawaii, can you watch the East Coast feed of Game of Thrones? Or when exactly do you watch it?
You know, they have DirecTV in Hawaii. So, yes, you watch it at 3 p.m.
I don't think it's going to be at 3. It is? How many hours behind the East Coast is Hawaii?
Well, the funny thing about Hawaii is
it doesn't change daylight savings time. Well, that's smart.
So when we jump forward, when we spring forward, it's 3 hours. And when we fall back, it's 2 hours. So, yes, it'll be 3 hours behind.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
And they don't. When I first moved to Hawaii a long, long time ago, the networks delayed shows by an entire week.
Whoa.
But they do show them in their regular times now. But any of these national stations,
okay. You
know, for example, Game of Thrones shows 9 o'clock, first time on the East Coast, and we see it at 6 p.m.
Right.
And it shows in Hawaii at 3 p.m.
All right, that's good to know.
So I'll be ahead of the curve. Even though I'm watching at the same exact time as everybody
else. I want
you
on the beach watching it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, thinking of the beach, it reminds me of the lesson I learned when I was on the beach. They baptized me? This is in Hawaii. They have a slightly different saying than they do on the Iron Islands.
What's that?
In Hawaii, they say, "What jumps in the water will never die." so maybe
that's my triple T, Theon.
Maybe Theon was going from the Hawaiian Islands rather than the Iron Islands tonight.
I also want to point out, listeners, that if you are new back with us on the Joffrey podcast, because the show is back up, we did 7 pregame podcasts for season 7. And even though a lot of those podcasts is kind of predicting what we think would happen in season 7, we also did a lot of funny things, some spinoff specials, some stuff you would really like.
I think it's funny. I think it's some of our best work.
We did do some good work, including with Randall Tarley, who we'll talk about in this episode
a bit.
And so go check out those podcasts. Finally, we're going to get to the contest. And what we've said is that for season 7, for you guys being so kind, there are literally hundreds of podcasts talking about Game of Thrones. So for you guys kind enough to download and listen to ours, we're giving away a prize every single week.
Wait, every week?
Every week that the show's on.
Holy cow.
We're giving away a prize.
We know, but how do we decide who to give the prizes to?
All you have
That's
to do.
That's a setup.
Oh, well, that was, and I'm going to slam it home. All you have to do to get your prize, which Uncle Euron is getting for you, your gift, is when we tweet out the link to the new Joffrey podcast, you either retweet that, or if you're not on Twitter, we have our Facebook page, facebook.com/PP podcast. That's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcasts, plural, facebook.com/PP podcast.
Love
There'll be a notice on the Facebook page. You just share that. You're eligible to win. Why are we making you clutter up your Facebook feed and Twitter feed with it? Really, we're doing this for free, and sometimes it's just tiring for us after doing the podcast, to promote it. So if you guys can help promote it, get the word out. You guys are great double L's.
Double L's?
Loyal listeners.
Oh, I remember that.
And we want to give you a prize. And we're going to give away another Game of Thrones live concert experience, Stein and poster, signed by Game of Thrones composer Ramin Djawadi. Catfish, your hand is in the big bowl. Pull out the prize winner. Let's hear. Who is it?
Okay, it is at Rebecca_Beluk.
Oh, this
or
is
Beluk, B-E-L-U-K.
I think this is Shadow Cat Bex, who also won a prize on our Twin Peaks podcast. Boy, this is a true double L.
Holy
cow.
Rebecca should be tweeting the crap out of our stuff.
Rebecca, just to confirm I have it, please go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/PP podcast, and send me your mailing address again. You guys are so kind. There's another double L who hopefully will win relatively soon. Somebody sent out a tweet to say, what are some of your favorite podcasts? And a great double L, Wendy King, who's at Wendy and King 1, tweeted back. She goes, my favorite podcasts are Pod Save America, FT FITWR, Fighting in the War Room. And then Wendy wrote, if you like Game of Thrones, the Joffrey podcast is amusing.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's pretty, yes. That's nice company to be in.
Well, not just amusing, but I think she also means amazing.
Right, that was a typo. So, guys, once again, when you see this in your Twitter feed, if you would be kind enough to retweet it, if you would be kind enough to share it on Facebook, every time you do that, I go through, it says these people retweeted it. It says these people shared the Facebook link. And so I just create another name, throw it in the bowl. We're going to be giving away prizes all season long.
Yeah, yeah.
And so why don't we get in
to this amazing 9.5 episode.
To this 7, and I'm being kind, 7 oh, wow. episode of Game of Thrones, written by our good friend Brian Cogman, who we met that one time at that Beverly Hills talent agency. And so it starts with Daenerys. Daenerys had her big I'm arrived home last episode, but she hasn't had a chance to talk yet.
Right. But also, I guess she finds out when she first gets there, she's like, oh my God, this place is beautiful. It's like Hawaii. And then it turns out it's Portland.
With this weather, yes. Stormborn is back in a storm. Last week, we kind of quipped about how Cersei and Jaime had this thing. Jaime, you've been quiet since you came back, a.k.a. letting the viewers of the show know, yes, Cersei and Jaime should have talked about this a long time ago, but now, now they're finally going to have the talk. This episode starts off with Daenerys and Varys. She really should have had this conversation well before she led him on the boat.
Well, that's true. However, I don't think it should be dinged because I thought this was amazing. This is, as our double L's.
Double L.
Loyal listeners know.
Oh, that's what that means.
I okay. have been very, very tough on Daenerys. It's not really her fault. You know, it's like Jessica Rabbit. She's not bad. She's just written bad. In that she has, you know, they've done a lot of stuff with her that's kind of delayed her progress and her growth. And I thought that this was an amazing confrontation with Varys. Even though I know Varys is a slippery mofo, I was actually afraid for him. She really puts him on the spot.
Well, no, Catfish, I agree with you. I do love her quizzing Varys. I would say logic, they couldn't put it when they wanted to put it. They put it now when it feels a bit too late. He's been on a boat with you all this time.
Right.
But that said, as much as I actually did like this confrontation, if Vary says, you know, kind of, if somebody's bad, you can't just have blind faith to them, then how is he ever, then isn't that pledge he makes kind of not true? He's like saying, yes, people who turn out to do bad things. Why would I have blind faith and blind loyalty to them? But Daenerys, I promise you, blind loyalty. That's what it feels like, as tough as this is.
But to me, it didn't feel like that to me because he says, I am trying to... I mean, he explains, and it feels like it happens more than once in this episode. Someone says, like, let me tell you why I feel that way. I was born a poor black man.
Hey, now.
No, but this is the Steve Martin joke. Sorry, that's an old one. But in other words, he goes into say, essentially, a lot of this ideology is coming up this season that I'd never seen before, and I'm glad to see it, is people are talking about, hey, the common people. What does all this mean to the common people? I mean, we've been playing the Game of Thrones and people are fighting, and not very many people have talked about what this means for the people we're supposed to be helping and leading. And so we saw that last week in the scene with Arya and the soldiers, and I feel like we got that this week. It also,
yeah,
and I thought in a clever way, instead of sex position, this was sort of a dressing down position. In other words, at the same time she's yelling at him, she gives us sort of a nice recap of everything that's kind of gone down.
Yeah, she does it previously on.
She does.
Right, yeah. Up in his grill, you know?
Yeah.
The next time you're in a fight with somebody, I think you need to give them a previously on.
Okay, listen. So we got together about 10 years ago.
So but my point being, though, is I think he's kind of saying two things, though. Why do you think he says that, I promise you I will never betray you? Because she could go nuts and start roasting people alive, and he's just said, It would be in my right to betray you.
Right, but then she says to me, see, to me, this scene, the difference why I enjoyed it much more than you was because for me, this scene was pretty much about Daenerys.
Okay,
and then
all
at
right.
the end when she says, if I'm not doing that, let me know to my face instead of trying to stab me in the back. And to me, that's, you know, the fact that she's saying that she's kind of putting him on the spot, but also saying, I want to be held accountable. That to me is like makes me like this character. I enjoyed what she said tonight
okay.
more than any other thing that she said.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, so you're
or done.
So you're possibly joining Team Daenerys.
Team Danny, hashtag.
All right. So
I always look up the hashtag at the end.
That's right. That'll really confuse him. Is
yeah,
when
heck yeah.
Ends in a hashtag.
You figure it out.
Now, somebody shows up. As soon as you're there, somebody shows up. Everybody, you know, you get a new house. It's a housewarming party. And who shows up but one of my favorite characters, Lady Melisandre. And Melisandre, she and Varys really should have trouble. If you remember back to season 2, the episode of Blackwater, Varys pretty much says, and here earlier in this episode, he said, oh, I need a better ruler, better ruler. But then he says, I won't support Stannis because Stannis had witchcraft, had these red priests. Here, Melisandre shows up. She's got visions. She's got prophecies. And she's like, there is someone, a princess who is promised. Not just you. So, quickly.
Right, but
does that
remember,
mean Jon Snow is a woman?
The reason why Varys doesn't have a problem is because Daenerys gives him another backhand during this discussion.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, oh, you're not the only one who served somebody bad. And then she looks back at Varys and he's like, now, you think Varys is going to have problems. What happens when Jon Snow shows up with Melisandre's favorite person in the world?
Oh, Davos, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's a good point. But would it have been really obnoxious if Daenerys is like, you know what? Melisandre isn't the only one who obeyed and served someone evil, but then turned to Missandei and went, you serve Krasnus.
Now, what I find interesting here, and it's, I wanted what your take on it is, Melisandre says a lot of good things about Jon Snow.
Yeah, he kicked her out, but she's still on Team Jon.
Right. But she doesn't say the most salient point of, she says, why do you think that your God favors Jon Snow? I would have led with, because he came back from the dead. My God brought him back from the dead. But Melisandre mentions that not at all. Why do you think she doesn't say anything?
Okay, why doesn't she?
Yeah.
I think the show is afraid to get to that part. I almost think the show wants, when they meet next week, Jon Snow to say, yeah, I know you're powerful. I know you're powerful. Look, opens up his shirt. Look at these stab marks. And then she goes, oh, yeah, well, I walked into fire and I live. And he goes, oh, yeah, well, I fought a nice zombie. You know, like, I think they're going to have a one-upsmanship. And
oh,
so they
right.
gotta, the show purposely has to save
and
the surprise.
And Jon's going to end with, I know something.
He goes, let me show you this thing that I did with Ygritte in the cave.
Yeah.
And then she goes, no. I saw it with Grey Worm and Missandei. Daenerys, what were you doing? So, but Tyrion.
I'm very excited.
Uncle Tyrion.
Again, the reason why I'm very excited, too, is because as you're getting tired of hearing me say, I think that it's going to end with Jon Snow and Daenerys. So my supposition is this first meeting is not going to go well.
I think it might not go well either, even though Uncle Tyrion is vowing for Jon Snow. They had technically, I guess, about a three-episode they hung out with each other for three episodes, the very first three episodes of the season. And yet Tyrion's still like, hey, I trust Jon Snow. I believe in Jon Snow. I got the Jon Snow on my bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Good work, Tyrion.
Well, you know, let's face it. Tyrion said and did enough that the remaining Starks actually have decent things to say about him, considering he's a Lannister.
Well, that's a good call. Well, hold on. Bran has seen a lot. Bran could say, I saw what he did to Shay. You know, Bran knows all your terrible secrets.
Right,
you know,
like, right.
But Tyrion proposes to Daenerys. He's like, you know what? we need allies. We got this ally up north. Why don't we consider him? The next time we're with Team Daenerys, the weather is better there at Dragonstone, and she has called in members of the team, and she lays out her plan. Now, I think this begins with a good argument. Yara's like, what's the deal? We're gonna smash. Why are we here even in Dragonstone? Let's just go, you know, bam, 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 take over the capital. We win.
Well, let's face it. You know, Yara is a fighter.
Yes.
Okay, and to a fighter, it's just like they say, to a hammer, every problem is a nail.
Right.
Right. But Daenerys has learned that you have to get the heart of the people. You can't just go willy-nilly killing them. She's got a plan now, and that is to be #NotMad.
But let me say, Ilaria Sand, she's also like, yeah, let's do this. And I would argue in Daenerys' family history, Aegon the Conqueror 300 years ago, he just conquered. He didn't try to get all the hearts and minds on my side. And in fact, Lady Olenna later on in this is going to be pitching, people are sheep. So which way of all these pitches, which do you think? Well, you know, before we get to the which to pitches, do you think Daenerys' plan? Do you like this plan? It's like, okay, Sand Snakes, you get on Yara Greyjoy's fleet. You come up, you attack King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Olenna, you've got your army. You know, take hold of all the food, because pretty much that's the only place with food anymore, the Reach. You do that. Then I'll say, send the only foreign fighters I'll send are the Unsullied, and I'll send them to take Casterly Rock. What do you think about this war plan?
Well, it's a smart plan, and I'm kind of spoiling another storyline, and their supposition is that Cersei is going to try to tarnish them and say everyone has to fight against these people because they're foreign invaders.
Right.
And Cersei basically gives the Trump announcement speech, but just forgets to say at the end, and some of them, I suppose, are good people. But basically, that's what she says about all the foreign invaders. So I think it's a smart move as it is.
Okay.
I mean,
but notice the dragons aren't a part of this plan anywhere. Like, the dragons, theoretically, don't have a part of the plan.
Well, that's a good point. But I think actually perhaps people would be more scared of the dragons than even the foreign invaders.
I think they would too. Lady Olenna once again says, my daughter was well loved. You know, Daenerys is like, you know, I don't want to turn cities to ashes. And Lady Olenna's like, well, my granddaughter was the most loved queen there was. She currently is ashes, you know?
Right. But part of the problem is because when they do this, they make it a zero-sum game, and they don't try to capture the hearts of the common people. And, you know, if there's one thing that Daenerys has gotten and we feel she gets from all the time she spent mucking about there, mm-hmm. was that you need to get the hearts of the people and not to punish the people. So I think she's learned. Now, one thing when Olenna says to her, and I don't know whether I'm making this up, and she says, are you a lamb? The thing that I flashed on was what the dragons were originally feeding on, which was goats. So it's kind of, if it had been a lamb, if they had been feeding on lambs, I would have thought they were making an allusion to that. But it is kind of funny because, you know, Daenerys has the dragons, and the dragons essentially eat goats and lambs for, she's not a lamb.
Okay. All right.
But I think they all have, all these people have the old mindset that causes the thing that Olenna says, war never ends.
Right.
And that war never ends because you are constantly trying to oppress everyone. And so you leave factions alive that you shouldn't, but you're also oppressing the people. Daenerys has got a new way. She's a millennial leader.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. This feels a bit more like Tyrion's plan, or a plan he came up with Daenerys as well. And later on, she even defends her hand to the queen Tyrion when Lady Olenna is talking trash about him.
She is. The only thing I missed out was I wish, because Olenna talks a lot of smack.
Oh, she does.
Yeah. I wish she had said, you mean your pinky of the queen?
Oh, you're saying to your evil Uncle Tyrion.
Because he doesn't measure up.
Oh, poor
he's not a full hand.
Right, but Olenna's saying, I've known a great many clever men. I've outlived all of them. You know why? I ignored them. So is this setting up that Daenerys is at a certain point going to ignore them, unleash the Dothraki, unleash the dragons, go do it?
Has Olenna ever really fully been in charge? She's kind of worked behind the
scenes.
That's
a tough call. Not that we've seen, but it feels like if she's
but
in charge.
She does her work behind the scenes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's easier to stay alive when you're the not the figurehead, but maybe the real power. So, I mean, Olenna, everyone thinks they survive because of their smarts. Sometimes you survive because you're not the main target.
All right. I certainly see that. I certainly see that. But Lady Olenna, for everybody who doesn't want Daenerys to go full mad queen, is kind of pretty much saying, be a dragon. That's like your Monday morning motivation poster. Be a dragon.
I just can't see that Daenerys has spent all this time learning all this, and then she's going to forget everything she's learned and go back to being whatever. I mean, if she is, I guess that's some real character growth and then ungrowth.
Speaking of growth,
yes.
Missandei and Grey Worm's relationship, it started to grow. Now, mm-hmm. We have, in this episode, I turned to you and I said, we're on Twig Watch. We are on Twig and Barry's Watch. The show did not show that to us. What have you felt all these seasons about the budding romance, the budding deep emotional connection between lovely Missandei and lovely Grey Worm? How have you felt about this storyline? Have you felt like it's just a side tangent, who cares? Or do you care about these characters and are happy that they had some passionate time together?
I do care about these characters, and I feel like they've shown me just enough of them. You know what I mean? We haven't seen a lot of them.
Missandei's almost shown us all of them.
Yes, we did see a lot. I would have liked to have known. It felt like for a second there that maybe it was that he still didn't have his twig and just
lost
his
berries.
But then he went down and he did the Jon Snow move.
Yes.
So, where does a guy learn something like that?
Where does an Unsullied learn?
Unsullied, yeah.
You know, listen, basic training is very, sorry.
Well, maybe he said,
boot camp
maybe it was just like he said. He is afraid. He's always been afraid of women. So basically, like when they throw someone who's afraid of water in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they threw him in a brothel when he was young. I'm afraid of women. All right, we'll throw you in the brothel and just work your way out.
Well, did you like it? This was, I think it was even categorized as not only adult content, but strong sexual situations. That's a triple S.
A triple S?
Strong. I just said it. Strong sexual situations.
Don't forget to put the hashtag afterwards.
You know, I would say that for Missandei is very lovely. My friend I always tell the story because she's so lovely. I met her when I had, after a Super Bowl many years ago, I think it was season 4. They were doing press for her, and I met her after the Super Bowl at a supermarket and got my picture taken with her. And she looks just as good. It's like she wants to stay in shape for me. And then Grey Worm.
She's hoping. She's going to that supermarket every day now.
Every day.
Every day.
But then Grey Worm also trying to give everybody some eye candy, equal time. But once again, we never saw the berries. Or the twig.
She doesn't make, there's no reaction as far as, you know.
Right.
Is he like a Ken doll, like completely smooth down there?
But you know what? They needed Varys and Theon to see this. They need, Theon, who is so scarred. They needed to show Theon this is what you can. You know, there's still ways you can have fun on the cruise ship. You know, people take cruises to get busy, and Theon, this could be how you do it when you're on the ship.
It feels like that Grey Worm is going to be gone for a long time after this. So who knows?
Well, I. Listeners, I predicted, I know nothing, But I predicted that like Gray Worm, this was it for him. So mm-hmm. it'll be interesting.
Well, he went out with a, I don't want to say bang.
I don't want to say that either. All right, so we had this great debate around Daenerys's war chamber about who we gonna, how are we going to approach this war? It mm-hmm. is war. How are we going to do it? In the north, let's go to Winterfell and cover Winterfell in totality. Because these debates between Jon Snow and Sansa Stark, I think are great debates. And I have to be honest, both weeks, I've kind of led towards... towards Sansa being right in both cases.
Okay. First of all, they haven't learned, even though Jon Snow said it last week, they haven't learned to communicate in private. Now, this time I'm going to blame Jon Snow because he had an idea and he should have talked to her. This is the funny thing the show doesn't show us. Like, do they never talk otherwise? He never says, hey, look, this is what I'm going to do. After they had the last conflict in right. public, he doesn't say, look, I'm going to say this. This is my idea. And they hash it out in private. So, again, this is hashed out in public. However, I'm going to say he's right and ooh. She's wrong. Mm. But,
oh, no.
But,
oh,
but,
no.
But, for the, but in her mind, she's right. And he says the exact key. The key... to knowing whether this is the right decision or not is whether you have seen and recognize the threat of the White Walkers. If you don't believe that the White Walkers are an existential threat, a huge army that will not only mow you down, but will then add you to their ranks mm-hmm. as they go through, then you think it's a bad idea. If you know that the White Walkers are so powerful that you need help, then you go with Jon. One thing I would have said if I was John was, hey, I did this before
okay.
with the wildlings. People said it was a bad idea, such a bad idea that they killed me for it. So, but that was the right decision then. This is the right decision now.
Okay, well, what's funny, I'm not sure with these northern lords, they would even still agree about the wildlings being the right decision.
Well, since they're going to help go to the wall, that's what I would say with John. And now the wildlings are on our side, and they have agreed to be our first defense on the wall.
Right. But I think, I got to be honest, John had the one letter, he had the one raven message from Daenerys and Tyrion that he did share in private with his "quote unquote," we assume hand to the king Davos, and with Sansa, right. and that
it's
was
knuckles
fine.
Of the king,
knuckle of the king's Davos. Then he gets the letter from Sam, and then once again he goes, not even half cocked. He goes full cocked. I've got to go. Sansa is right. Send an emissary. Send a friggin' raven. She sent you a raven. Why don't you send her one and say, "Boy, I would love to come bend the knee, but we got friggin' ice zombies up here. Come up here." Bring your dragons to help me fight this war. I'll swear fealty to you till there's no tomorrow. He's the leader. What if while he's off on his little mission, the wall gets breached? What are you going to do then? Sansa's right. Send an emissary. Send Sansa, why don't you? She could speak for you, even though she disagrees with everything you say.
All right, well, I disagree. I think the way they put it, he has to bend the knee. Now, the funny thing was I didn't get the sense that maybe Tyrion wrote the letter for the raven, and so he softened the bend the knee part. And by soften, I mean he just decided to omit it. That right. wasn't in there. But Jon clearly took that as a, I have to go. And knowing the way Daenerys felt, it seems like she would have thought it was an insult if he didn't go. I kind of see your point a little bit.
You said this during the episode, Catfish. You said when you've lost Triple L. Little Lady Lyanna.
Oh, yeah.
When you've lost her, Jon Snow, you've lost the room.
Yeah.
She'll back you for everything.
She has been on top of everything. But once, exactly. Once you lose her, thank you for saying that. Once you lose her, you're in trouble.
And once again, what was John's probably biggest problem with letting the wildlings through is he didn't say, listen, he didn't explain seriously enough. He didn't take the guys who went with him to Hardhome and said, everybody who was here at Hardhome, explain what you saw. So all the Night's Watch would have heard, not just Jon Snow, but like 10 people, I forget how many Night's Watchmen survived Hardhome, but say, yeah, this guy's bringing back people from the dead. We can't have anybody dead up north of the wall because they'll become people. These people in this room that Jon Snow is debating, they're pointing out good things. Lannisters can't be trusted. The Mad King did kill their grandfather. The Mad King was the worst thing that's probably ever happened to the realm in some ways.
Right, and but so, you will agree with me that he's right that they can't kill the White Walkers themselves. That
no, they need help, but why does but he you're, have to go?
That's your why problem with it. Why does he have to go?
And okay. Why is he so immediately trusting? Why is he so immediately trusting?
It's not that. It's that this... It's not immediately trusting. You just said, what if the White Walkers show up while he's gone? He has to do this right away. He's got to do this right away. There's no time to waste. You just agreed that there's no time to waste.
How about this? Send little Lady Lyanna. She convinces anybody. Daenerys will be like, wait, I told Jon Snow to come. And I answered the call. House Mormont answered the call. Okay, yes, but I wanted the king here so I could debate with him. You wanted the king. I wanted to lead an army to kill Ramsay Bolton, and I did it.
Right.
You know? You didn't answer the call. Well, you know, I was in Marine. They didn't call me. You didn't answer the call.
There was a call. Did you or did you not answer the call? Because I answered the call.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you send little Lady Lyanna Mormont down there, she'll come back with three dragons and army. So, you know, those idiots down in Dragonstone won't know what hit them.
All right. Well, I think he felt like he had to go. Look. And the reason why this is, I feel like he has to go.
Okay.
Is because they're here for a totally different reason.
Oh, that's true. That, okay. You mean to Team Daenerys, right?
Team Daenerys is here for a totally different reason. Now, he's going to have to explain to her, look, let me tell you about this thing that you have never heard of before. And in fact, most of my people don't even believe in. I mean, he's got to do some serious talking for himself, and I still think he's better.
How about this? Davos really sells it hard, and Davos has never seen any White Walkers. He's never seen the Army of the Dead.
Yeah, right, but he needs to go. Daenerys feels like someone needs to get on his knees, and Jon has trained in that already, as we said, in the cave. So he's the one to get on his
That's
knees.
That's how he's going to convince her.
Listen, it worked with Grey Worm.
Right, oh, and he could kill two birds with one stone. He'd be like, I know they're dragon glass caves, and I know about working in caves. Come with me.
Oh, man, look at that. Boom, done.
Now, I like that Jon does say, I'm leaving a good person in charge, the only Stark in Winterfell. There's even kind of a look that Brienne liked that move. Like, okay, good. I'm glad that Sansa's in charge. But you know who else?
Oh, my God.
There was a smirking.
Littlefinger.
Smirk alert.
Littlefinger. The actor who saw Littlefinger probably read through the first, you know, 1.5 scripts, and all he saw was Littlefinger smirks, Littlefinger smirks, Littlefinger smirks. Now, he had that amazing scene, which we're going to get to later.
No, let's get to it right now.
Then let's do it.
Let's go down to the Winterfell catacombs, the tombs. Jon Snow is looking at this statue that is of his father, he thinks, Lord Eddard Stark. I want to ask you a question, Catfish. When exactly did this statue get made? Theoretically, it could have been made maybe in season 2, but then pretty soon in season 2, Theon and the Ironborn took over Winterfell, so they wouldn't have said keep working on that statue.
It had to have happened. Had to have happened then.
Well, no, then right, exactly. Then Ramsay took over. Ramsay's not going to be like, I love flaying my enemies and making statues to the dead people we've conquered.
Well, what would have been nice is while they're having this scene is all of a sudden they cut and there's a guy at the bottom still chipping away. And he's like, sorry, sirs. I'll be done shortly, sirs.
You know, the guy who made this statue also made Euron's Thousand Ships. Now, Jon Snow and Littlefinger.
Now, Littlefinger may have told white lie here.
Oh, man.
You know I'm bad at remembering the books, but also the show.
Sure.
I seem to recall Littlefinger having a slight hand in the killing of Ned Stark.
He does. Yeah, he did. But Jon doesn't know that. What sets Jon Snow's anger off is Littlefinger saying, not only did he love Cat Stark, but when he says, I love Sansa.
The same way. Holy cow.
Whoa, and Jon... John isn't ready for her to have another suitor. He gives Littlefinger the Ned treatment because that's what Ned did to Littlefinger outside his brothel back in season one.
Right. And this goes to show you that John hasn't learned the most important lesson. As soon as somebody talks smack to you, you cut their head off right then and there.
True. No, that's a great, well, that's a great call. But also, John is a little bit whiplash. He's like, we need allies. We need allies. Littlefinger, like him or not, and you're free not to like him, Jon Snow, but those Knights of the Vale, they are acting as if Littlefinger is their leader as opposed to Robin Arryn, who's back at home. And so why not just suck up to him? Why not say, you know, why not? How about this? Littlefinger, you touch my sister in any way, you're dead. But I need your armies here, so I'll let you touch Brienne.
Oh my God. This is the Stark problem. You don't threaten someone and then walk away from them. Okay? You just
how about walk
simple
away
from threat?
You
threat to kill.
You threaten somebody, then you leave them in your house as you leave. That's what Jon Snow did, Catfish.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what he did. The only thing I can say about that is I believe Sansa. I don't believe that Sansa is going to be suckered in by him in any way. Now, I could be wrong, but they've made her so strong and aware of what's going on. I feel like she's going to use Brienne as essentially her hand.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah.
And so I don't think Brienne's going to steer her into the arms of Littlefinger. She's not a fan.
No. So now, Catfish, let's go to our third kind of power player, Queen Cersei. Cersei has called up what you would call the B team of lords, meaning not the lords of an area, but bannermen to those lords.
Mm.
And in fact, some of those are bannermen to House Tyrell, House Tyrell, however you like to say it, including
Randall Tarly
and my son, not Rickon, Dickon.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, Tarly's missing something. And I'm not talking about what Grey Worm is missing.
Well, his sword!
He's missing his sword! Oh, he's going to need that in the fight. Now, he does put up a little bit of a protest. It's interesting the way he kind of tries to hold out. Yeah. But before he does that, Cersei does make her great claim. The Great Unwashed are coming over here.
Oh,
they're going to use our services.
They're going to rape and pillage.
They're going to get our Medicare.
Right, rape and enslave your women,
yeah.
Butcher your children, and some, I'm sure, are good people. Terrible thing that our leaders like to say here in the United States. But she also spun a bit of fake news. She said her horrors she's inflicted upon Essos are already... She mentioned some truth, though. She said Daenerys, you know, crucified those people and nailed them up, the masters of Meereen. And so... She said Daenerys fed masters to her dragons. Now, we did see her feed one person to a dragon, a person who might actually have been innocent of the harpy stuff in Meereen.
She is talking a little bit of hyperbole here. However, she also is talking to the people who are in charge. And if Daenerys has been unkind to anybody, it's been to the people who she's not a fan of the one percenters. And Cersei is talking to the one percenters or the wannabe one percenters.
Now, Randall Tarly is like, she's got three dragons. How are you going to stop three dragons? Which is a question the audience was asking about.
I've been asked, going nattering on about it forever. And then Qyburn gives his little finger smirk.
Right. Well, we are working on something. Now, before we get to Qyburn's solution, which doesn't feel like the greatest solution, if you ask me, we see Jaime go up to Randall Tarly and the new actor playing Dickon. There's a new actor playing Dickon this year. The actor who played Dickon last year was in a series here in the United States called Time After Time, a story about, you know, Jack Ripper and people chasing Jack Ripper going from London to present-day New York City. And it got canceled after two episodes. Now, I'm sure he made a lot of money for being on that show, but he doesn't get to be in the biggest show on TV, Game of Thrones, again this year.
Mm.
Randall Tarly, let's call it, there's no way he doesn't switch to the Lannister side. He puts up a good fight. He says, you know, I'm not like you, Kingslayer. I keep my oath. I gave my word to House Tyrell. I'm not going to switch sides.
It feels like he's angling for a little bit more.
You know, that's a good call.
It's like when there's a bill up on the Senate and they're like, I'm kind of wavering. What they really want is a little bit more sweet pork for their state.
Exactly, right.
I don't know if I'm going to vote for that.
Now, Jamie.
But if you build this bridge.
Now, Jamie tries some stuff. Jamie says, you know, after we win this war, somebody's going to have to take over the Reach because we're going to take out House Tyrell. You know, we're going to need somebody to oversee it. And that would be a nice jump up for House Tarly. But he's saying, I've known Lady Elena since I was a child. She's a great woman. Jamie's like, now she's broken. She wants revenge so badly, she brought the Dothraki to our shores. Dothraki in Westeros. Ooh.
She is bitter, as she shows later on when she's like, burn them all. Go mad queen on them.
Oh, for sure. Now, of course, Cersei's kind of talking out the side of her mouth because everybody seems to know that Cersei blew up, killed her enemies too. Kind of, this is tough. So, but I don't see any way that he isn't going to say, okay, I have a chance to be Warden of the South. Let's try this. What do you think? Or do you think there's a chance he could stick on the House Tyrell side because he's afraid of the dragons? What do you think?
Well, it seems to me that House Tyrell is going to have some problems now. They had some ships coming their way that may no longer be coming their way.
So since
they've made a big strike here, I think he's the kind of guy that will look and see, okay, which side do I think is going to win?
Yeah, okay, that's a good goal.
I think he's going to think based on this first big setback for Team Danny, right. Hashtag, that he'll go with the Lannisters.
All right, so I said it earlier in this podcast, I was pumping my fist. Qyburn is coming up with ways to fight these dragons. He brings Queen Cersei down here once again into the dungeons, into the catacombs here, in the Red Keep in King's Landing, where Robert, these dragon skulls used to be in the throne room. King Robert, usurper Robert, who, to be honest, I still to this day don't think really was that bad of a king, considering he got all
the... Considering the kings that have followed him.
Yeah. So he brings these dragon skulls down here.
Willful neglect is better than outright villainy.
Right. And Balerion the Black Dread. Did you love the size of that dragon skull? That's impressive. That is very impressive.
I just want to say, don't take Qyburn to a museum.
Right. He
will find the most precious, oldest artifact, and he'll just start shooting shit at it.
He'll be like, this was the Rosetta Stone. Now, once we fire this...
Most people think it's very sturdy.
So Qyburn, here he is. Are they called scorpions? What is this weapon called? Do you know, Catfish?
I can't remember. Honestly, I thought considering Qyburn's interests, that this would be a little bit more...
Yeah, I did too. More scientific evil.
Yeah. That would be more spiritual, freaky. Instead, he just makes a big-ass...
Crossbow,
yeah. But now, you know what? Looks effective.
But how could it work? You need a... Yes, he did smash a dragon skull, one that had been aging and theoretically decomposing. But also, it was still. Dragons fly around. Dragons...
Well, here's the thing. This is not going to be... This is like the prototype. Imagine 50 of these up on the wall, and they're just shooting them willy-nilly into the sky.
I hope so. I want some battles. I want some fights. I want... The end of this episode, we're going to save till the end. We've still got to talk about what's happening with Sam down in Old Town. We also have to talk about Arya Stark's incredible kind of wayward journey. She keeps turning around. But I want to talk about it. Can Qyburn use this thing to take one out? That's the only way, quote unquote, this fight can be even.
Well, he's right that we saw the dragon experience some issues when it was just regular arrows.
Oh, that's true.
And this arrow
spears,
is like...
In spears.
Yeah, spears. Sorry. Yeah,
back in
spears.
in the fighting pits in Marine.
This thing is, you know, metal. It's got a lot more force to it instead of just a puny human fighting it. He's using science. Okay? I really feel like if like five of these hit a dragon, it could at least take it down.
Right.
And if a dragon can't fly, what effing good is it? I mean, you can put it on a big cart and bring it around and it can light people on fire, but it seems a little onerous.
Speaking of onerous, let's look at Sejora's skincare. He really needed...
Sir Scabzone?
Sir Fredzone.
He used to be Sir Fredzone. He's now Sir Scabzone.
Let me tell you, you know, put some Bactine on that. How about wear some SPF lotion, Sejora? He looks bad. He looks so bad that his yellow shirt is now contaminated with grayscale. And you even know, Samwell is looking at him like, yike.
But Samwell, you know, it wasn't until this episode I realized... What I've always looked at Samwell kind of like everybody else. He kind of lucked into kind of being brave. But think about the stuff that Samwell has done.
Oh yeah,
okay,
he is kind of brave.
He's a badass. He stole his dad's sword.
Right,
right. He stole books.
Right,
right. And now he is going to. Now he's blatantly misbehaving for his own purposes. I mean, he's like a rebellious teenager. That guy is crazy.
I know. And what's tough is this Archmaester on last week's podcast, we screwed up his name. His name is like Ebros or Ebros. Archmaester wants to cut health care to Ser Jorah. But Samwell's giving, you know, coverage for everybody, including this. I mean, Ebros was going to say, you know what, because you're a knight, I won't send you back immediately. I'll give you a day. What, in this quarantine zone?
Well,
how fun.
No, but see, but what happens is, I think he's signaling something that I only picked up on because of what Jorah does. Jorah then looks at his sword.
Right.
I think what he's essentially saying is, you probably want to take care of this yourself. You probably want to die here and now at your own hand.
Or by your own Sam's hand.
By Sam's hand. Right. But basically, yeah, basically the Archmaester is like, you do realize that that's a pre-existing condition.
And Sam, I did like this. You know, when we have what I would call the streams to pass, when we have characters intersecting and seeing each other, as soon as Sam finds out that it's Jorah Mormont and Sam's connection with Jorah Mormont there at the wall, I love that that is the impetus to get Sam to, you know, just break rules. Sam is a rule breaker.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's just a crazy rebel. He seems like a nice, sweet guy, but you tell him one thing, he's going to do whatever the F he wants. He's going to smile like a sweetheart the whole time.
But let's cover this next little section here in the library where Sam is pitching to his teacher. He's pitching to his teacher. Gosh, is there anything we can do for this guy? Because he found out he's a Mormon.
Now, that was
a
funny bit.
Is there anything we can do? I read this thing about this guy, and the teacher's like, yeah, you know that guy you read about? You know what killed him? Grayscale.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was a funny bit. Now, he said it was too dangerous, and I turned to you at that point, and I said, well, how dangerous could it be? I mean, essentially, you know, it's like if someone has a disease and they won't let them try some experimental treatment on them, it's like, well, how bad could it be? Like, they're going to die of the disease. And you suggested maybe, you know, that he could transmit the disease by trying to cure him. I'm still not sure whether I believe that.
Well, yeah, Sam, yeah, you got gloves, Sam, but all this stuff should be burnt. All this stuff that Ser Jorah touches, burn it. I mean, you can't scrub the walls of this quarantine section down well enough, in my opinion. And so... I don't know. I love that Sam is doing it. It might upset me a bit to see that it would work. That hear everybody in the Citadel saying it can't work, it can't work, it can't work. And Sam says, oh, let me try it. I've never done it before. That's a funny bit when Ser Jorah's like, hey, have you ever done this surgery before? Sam should just lie. It's like, yeah, I do it all the time.
Sam should say, no. Jorah should know no one has ever been healed of it.
Right.
So exactly. If Sam had done it before, the person would have died. So Jorah should be happy that he hasn't done it before, because if he had done it before, that person would no longer be alive. Now, my question to you, though, is with the grayscale, to me, it feels like if he takes it off, he's not There's not skin underneath there.
No, it's muscle.
He's essentially
and flesh.
De-skinning him. So then does he have some sort of ointment? I just can't imagine that Jorah, no matter how tough he is, Sir Scabzone is going to have to pass out in like 2 minutes. I mean, he's got a lot of area to cover.
That's a good point. Why didn't Sam give him milk of the poppy and put him under?
Yeah, good point. I mean, if Sam can steal whatever kind of stuff, he can surely get some drugs. Some M of the P.
And so, but how about this? Will you be a bit disappointed, like I might be, if Sir Jorah, if Sam can cure him? Is it too simple that Daenerys said, Jorah, I demand you find a cure? Jorah, I'm going to assume the first place he went, found a friggin' cure. Is that too simple? And like I feel like it might be.
Well, I feel like they've brought it up. They brought up this grayscale, and I didn't know why they first brought it up. And then Jorah got it, so that makes sense. Okay, we had to know about it, so Jorah got it. And the only reason that Jorah is still around is to get healed from his grayscale. There's nothing left for Jorah.
Right.
He's not gonna die in that cell. So I guess I'm going to cut him some slack, because just the fact that he's still around means, you know, that he's going to have to survive.
And this really looked gross. It really looked painful.
But there was an amazing cut, though, that you didn't mention.
It was a cut. Well, we're going to take that cut from Chesty Jorah's flakes. Flaky goodness, Jorah. And we're going to leave this, and we're going to go to a delicious pie in the Inn at the Crossroads. Hot pie is back.
You know what? A man who loves his work never works a day in his life, and that is hot pie. Not only is hot pie thriving, but it looks like he's his own taster.
Hey, now. Well, he hasn't been running anywhere. I love that he calls Arya Ari, which is how she got introduced to him as a boy, the boy Ari, when they were on the road up to the Night's Watch. Hot Pie is certainly the most likable guy, isn't he? He's just a friendly dude.
He's happy. He's the one person on this entire show who's found his calling, who... That calling does not include killing other people.
Right. And this is a funny bit. There are things in this episode I like where he's explaining how he made the crust of this pie. Arya's like, oh, I never did that. He goes, you made a pie? And Arya's like, yeah, I've made one or two. Oh, Frey pie.
Frey pie. Now, this also is a great scene because it answers a question that I sort of had last week, or a supposition I had last week. And even before, that was sort of answered a little bit last week. Sorry to go in such a torturous manner, but this is the first time she finds out, holy cow, Winterfell is back in the hands of the Starks. As the soldier said last week, we don't get ravens out here. So your question had been, does she know why she's still going south? So now
in that fortnight, she was appearing as Walder Frey at the Twins.
Right,
she never got any... She never got any ravens, any messages?
I assume
Walder Frey wouldn't have got a message?
John's been up there for a while, I think. I feel like the raven would have come ahead of time, and then they throw away the paper. I don't think Walder Frey, you know what, maybe if she'd stuck around and talked to people rather than just killing them right away, she could have found out the news.
And Arya... even though she's with Hot Pie, somebody who you would think would help bring back her humanity, it's not till Hot Pie mentions that the Boltons aren't in charge of the North that she flips a switch. She's still kind of single-minded on Cersei, and it's up to Hot Pie to give her the breaking news. That's where you begin to see a bit of the old Arya, and that's who I assume we viewers want.
Right, right.
And so Hot Pie, not good at flirting, he's like, you know, you're really pretty. Hot Pie, the way to a woman's stomach apparently isn't with your food, because she gets up and leaves you, buddy. Nice try.
And there's Hot Pie still alive.
Yes, that's the way we like him. He's a survivor.
He said, now the fact that he says he's a survivor,
that bodes
not well for him.
Right. And so apparently, according to these guys who are trying to get there for the siege of King's Landing to possibly make some money. They say it's 200 miles from the Inn at the Crossroads to King's Landing.
So we're thinking she's a lot closer to King's Landing at this point than she is
than she is to Winterfell, very much so. But she doesn't follow them. Going south, she turns tail like Theon and goes north. And then we get this scene with the direwolves. And this is a scene which, why am I tougher on this episode? Fans, and maybe it's my own expectations. When a direwolf, you know, this is like when you see a gun in the first act, that gun has to go off, right, by the end of the act, is what they say, people who write movies. When you see a direwolf disappear into the woods in the second episode ever, that direwolf has to come back and play a big role. And this was an emotional moment, kind of a heartbreaking moment in some way. But is this it? This feels a bit like, remember how last season they brought back Osha and Rickon? And they kind of didn't do anything? And like Osha especially, hey, here Osha's got captured by the Umbers. Next episode, she tries to flirt with Ramsay. Ramsay kills her. The end, the story's over. Arya sees this pack of wolves, sees Nymeria again, but she says, that's not you. Now, in the grand scheme of things, she's saying, according to the showrunners, the thought process they're trying to get across, and they talked about this in the inside the episode, is they said something along the lines of, Arya is now a lone wolf, and her dire wolf, Nymeria here, is now part of a pact. And so she's like, you know what? You're part of a pact. I'll let you go. What do you think, Catfish?
I am going to – this is the one probably deviation from the book that that I don't like, but I'm going to accept just because I think the direwolves are very tough for the show.
Yeah, they've never been able to easily do them. Once they decided they weren't going to be dogs and they were going to be kind of these mythical creatures and actual wolves, according to some things I've read this was actually filmed in Canada, where all these wolves are kept and where they normally film the wolves. But I wanted it. I wanted, if this direwolf ran away and escaped the death that was coming for it, I feel like there has to be more to it. And you're right, they never do the direwolf effects very well. These effects weren't especially great effects. But it feels like it's going out with a whimper and not a bang. And so I wanted a bang. I'll say it.
Well, I'll say this, that they brought the gun back and then they discharged it into the floor.
Yeah, that's okay? Exactly right.
So, yeah, I see where you're going with that. I just think that they have phased out the wolves so much. For me, especially having reread the first book over and over again, that opening with them finding the wolves is so strong to me.
Yeah, there's no way that
the connection
that
they have with the direwolves in the books has never been expressed as strongly on the show. Now, George R. R. Martin didn't let all the direwolves live happily ever after either. He likes to kill direwolves just as much as he likes to kill people. So, I mean, I'm not saying that it's a complete change, but they just haven't been able to, you know, in the book it felt like the direwolves, that they found the direwolves and there was one for each child and even one for Jon Snow, the quote-unquote bastard, that it kind of marked this family as special.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Maisie Williams, who you've acted in a movie with, I think you got to give some credit to her here. She's obviously saying these lines to things that can't talk back, that to giant wolves that aren't there when she's filming it. The look she has when the wolves turn and leave, she has sadness, but then she kind of, in her performance, the sadness leaves her and she kind of smiles and says that line, that's not you. And she's trying to show that she's okay with Nymeria and the pack leaving. I think Maisie Williams does a great job. It still is a miss of a scene for me, but I want to tip my cap to her.
I mean, if you care about the direwolves, you got to be happier with them not being with the Starks.
Yeah, that's right.
Than being with
right,
the Starks.
Right, not going up north to where the White Walkers and their evil whites are leaving. Catfish, this is a 7-episode season.
And they're just humming things along.
They
love it.
And let's get to the piece de resistance.
What is that?
What I think is the strongest section in this episode. We're going cruising on the narrow sea with the smaller of the two Greyjoy fleets, the Greyjoy fleet on Team Daenerys. And people diss these Sand Snakes because it was so butchered what they did in season 5. And so many fans, when they see the Sand Snakes on the screen, they groan. But for various reasons, one of them include that I just like a lot of these actresses a lot. I actually was really glad to see them on this. Any thoughts on the Sand Snakes catfish once they appear in this episode on this boat?
Well, I thought you were going to complain because we brought them back and then we just kind of wiped them out. I agree that unlike a lot of other characters, they pretty much got short shrift here.
Oh, totally.
So
yeah, it's like the show used them poorly in season 5 and then just didn't want to use them at all in season 6 because they appeared in 2 episodes, the first and the last. And now here, they're back. They know they haven't worked on some levels. They know what does work about this Sand Snake storyline is Ilaria Sand and her kind of need for revenge and her ways that she loves to love. And so this scene, once it cuts into one of the, you know, the galley of the ship, mm-hmm. where you see Yara, you see Theon, and you see Ilaria. This is fun. This is a way I think people can like these characters. Who knows how much longer they could survive. But did you like the flirtation between Yara and Ilaria Sand?
I love it. Now, Ilaria's way of flirtation is a little bit more, it's kind of like seductive and sly, like a snake. I mean, really, you know what I mean? It's more like, taste this evil pleasure. Where Yara is more like, she's like a sailor hitting the shore. Let's do this. Who's up for this? And so to see the two of them together and just the moment that clicked, it's just so much fun. It's fun when they have
it
this
was
kind of fun.
Yeah. Did you like the torture that this seems to give poor Theon every time this stuff happens?
Well, yeah, because I felt like it set him up. This was his scene as much as theirs because it's another continuation of, she's like, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to advise. Well, I'd advise you to watch me take your sister down.
Whoa.
She doesn't say that, but she means it.
No, totally. And then right once they start to mackin', the ship starts to crackin'. You're on with this crackin', bust open this ship, and I've never thought the show did boats very well. I thought they've done sea battles and boats about as well as they've done the direwolves. They stuck it at night, and this...
That helped it a lot.
That helped it a lot, and this is a frantic attack. I feel like the editing is cut way too quickly, but this is a frantic attack. I don't even understand how exactly Euron and his team were launching these fireballs out. I assume they're like the ships in Marine we saw last season.
Even though I loved it, at one point I thought, are the dragons showing up here? What the hell? So, I mean, right. It is dangerous to have a fiery catapult on a ship.
No, it totally is. And so, Euron, you want to talk about a guy who was never given much time. Last season, he was only on 2 episodes, about as much as the Sand Snakes. And yet, in 2 episodes into this season, they've built him up. He is a badass. He is a new fan favorite.
You love his swagger.
And this is a chaotic, bloody mess. Theon, give him some credit. Yes, he has PTSD, but he fought and he killed some people as his sister starts killing people. But this avalanche of people from Euron's ship, which in the books is known as the Silence, it's just too much, especially when your ship's on fire already.
And I was thinking through it. Well, my God, I didn't think that this was really going to be the end for Yara and Theon. And so I didn't know how are these people going to split up again. But it turns out instead what's happening is, and I guess we kind of have the answer to what Euron's gift is going to be for Cersei. I assume it's going to be Ilaria. I don't know why he's saving Yara. That doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, maybe that's his present for himself. He's like, here's your gift. I got something for myself as well when I was out shopping.
Oh, okay. All right. I like that. I always like to shop for yourself. You know, when you shop for yourself, you get the perfect thing.
Normally, that's true. That's normally true. So the Sand Snakes, let's give them some credit. The two that died, they went out fighting. They went out fighting, and they fought pretty well. I would say in a ship battle like this, I really don't think a whip is the greatest weapon in any way. But I want to give, I think it's Nymeria Sand with the whip. She did very, very well. And then Obara is with the spear. She fought, and she got some licks in on Euron, knocked him down. But, yeah, when he speared her, it was over. It was...
The double S's.
Double S?
The Sand Snake.
Huh.
The triple S's.
Triple S's.
Sand Snake Sisters.
Aww.
they kind of got hoisted on their own petards, as it were.
Right, because Obara fought with a spear. She got killed with a spear. Nymeria fought with a whip. She got hung with her whip. And so, yes, she did. Now, the Tyene, the one who's actually a daughter of Alaria Sand, who's not actually, you know, the other two Sand Snakes, that isn't their mother. They got killed. They got really brutally killed by Euron. But Euron is totally, he's won. This is it. This is a great victory. This is the kind of victory that, quote unquote, could even it up for, now Dany has a lot less ships, let's be honest. Now, why weren't the ships carrying the Unsullied to Casterly Rock? Why weren't they part of this armada, I'd like to know?
No, but I think these are the ships going to pick up the Tyrells.
These are the ships that were going down to Dorne that were going to get the Dornish people to fight in King's Landing. Now, theoretically, both ships would be on the same path for the longest time. That's what I'm saying. Let's ignore the logic of it.
Okay.
But Euron, why doesn't he kill Yara, do you think? He just wants his own gift, or he wants to give Queen Cersei two gifts? It looks like he's got her two.
I think he definitely is going to give her Alaria. Believe me, Cersei wants Alaria bad.
He's going to give Alaria, Alaria's daughter, Tyene Sand, and then maybe also Yara. Why not give her? You know, everybody, you get a gift. Three gifts. That's
pretty good.
Well,
Yara hasn't done anything yet.
To Cersei, that's true.
For Cersei to be, you know, Cersei would be like, fine if she's a throw-in, but, you know. In other words, if she's my complimentary gift along with the other ones. But, yeah, she doesn't care about Yara. Only Euron would have a reason to keep Yara alive.
Well, how about this? The battle is pretty much been lost. Theon, once again, he did fight well, but then the next thing he sees is his sister being held at knife point by his uncle. And this was an incredibly powerful scene to me.
Mm-hmm.
Euron is talking trash, you cockless coward, a double C.
Double C?
Cockless coward.
Hashtag.
And what do you think Yara wants Theon to do? Do you think Yara wants Theon to go down swinging and she's like, I'm dead, so at least kill Uncle Euron?
These people are fighters. Just like I said, to them, everything is a nail because they're hammers. So, but you know, pardon this phrase, pardon the pun, nut up, Theon.
Easier said than done when you're Theon.
True story.
Theon drops his sword and he jumps in. And then Euron just cackles, laughs at his nephew running away. That's when you know it's over. You have this terrible shot of the Sand Snakes on this sinking, burning ship. Oh, I have to be honest. I have some book theories that make me think that Theon's going to live to the end. So during this, I never thought Theon, even if it got captured, would get killed. But this is
what jumps off the boat will never die. The fact that Theon didn't die in this means obviously, you know, he's got a bigger part to play. At some point, I mean, in the back of my head, it's always going to be some point something's going to snap in Theon and he's going to he's going to be strong again. I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, God knows he has suffered through quite a bit, and to see, you know, Yara held it at sword point right, by his uncle. If that doesn't do it, I don't know what will.
Right. In this shot, this is a fun effect shot. It's at night of Theon, I guess, holding on to some remaining pieces of wood that broke off from these ships. and Euron's ship somehow sneaking out of this fiery destruction that he's done. Great way to the end of the episode.
Whew.
And
so
Theon,
now I think you agree with me. 9.5.
Well, this moment of Theon, I still think the battle was too cut a bit too quickly for my taste. But Theon's moment there, that was powerful. Those are the kind of powerful moments that I want in the show, and the show can do so great. It's not just spectacle, but it's powerful moments like that. And so
I just love how everything is coming together.
It did end on a high point for me.
I love how everything is coming together. They're not dilly-dallying around this season.
Not at all. No. Catfish.
They're not Rick on or Dick on and around.
Well, they are a bit like Rickon. They're just running in a straight line towards the end. They're not
Serpentine.
Catfish, how can people reach you on Twitter?
Well, they can hit me up at CJGman67. Let us know your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/DoublePPodcast. Let us know what you think. Tell us your ranking out of 10. Who's right in this instance? Is Catfish right? It's a 9.5, and this is knocking it home. That pace is going great. Or am I? Bubba. Is Bubba right? They're just introducing, I just happened to read A Cure for Grayscale in a book. Let's do it. Is it moving too fast? Are the emotional moments not hitting hard enough? We have got only 5 more episodes left.
Wow.
Is that incredible? And we may not have a Game of Thrones at all next year, 2018.
That doesn't seem right to me.
It's crazy. My name's Bubba. Wait, hold on a second. But you can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitTenTrim. At Fit and Trim on Twitter. Now, Catfish, how do we end every episode of the Joffrey podcast?
Well, because we are honoring the greatest human being, real or fictional, ever created, every week we try to tell you about someone who embodied at least one aspect of Joffrey.
Yeah.
And Bubba, this week I'm going to do one of your favorite devices. I steal it from you because you do such beautiful things. I'm going to ask you a series of questions.
Oh, great. I love this.
So what do we know about what has Joffrey done in the last couple seasons?
He's been undercover taking down the real usurpers.
Right. So he pretended to go away,
right,
like he was killed or fired or resigned.
Right.
And then he just decided that he left to take down the real power behind the throne.
Right.
So
right. And so Melissa McCarthy is a bit like a usurper. This is hilarious. I'm going to guess that the Spice King, not the Spice King of Karth from season 2, but I'm guessing your Joffrey of the Week is former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer.
It is, because he led from the podium, and then when he realized that he wasn't getting the work done that he could, like he would be behind the scenes, he's now resigned. And now he's going to, you'll see the real power. And in a couple years from now, just like with Joffrey, sitting back a couple years from now, Sean Spicer will emerge victorious. So for being sly and pretending to get out of the way so that he could do the real work behind the scenes, Sean Spicer is my Joffrey of the Week. Now, what about you, Bubba?
Well, Catfish, what have you heard many people say? Here's your clue. What have you heard many Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire fans say? They have said Joffrey is dead.
Yeah, they have said that. But they've also said our podcast is amusing.
Right.
So you can't always trust them.
Right, but they said Joffrey is dead.
Uh-huh.
Name another figure who people like to say blank is dead.
God?
Oh, no. Catfish, Joffrey is godlike, but no, this person is somebody I'm going to be seeing at a concert in 2 days in Chicago.
Oh my goodness. The famous, and for our listeners, our millennial listeners, of course, this is going to be a great touchstone for them. But a while ago, there was a rumor while the Beatles were still big and still together that Paul McCartney was dead, and that there were hints that you could find everywhere that Paul McCartney
cover
is dead.
Cover of Abbey Road, there were all sorts of hints that Paul didn't have shoes on.
Yep.
But Paul isn't dead. He's doing a concert. Mm-hmm. Please, Spirit Airlines, get me to Chicago in one piece tomorrow morning. Paul is alive. Joffrey is alive. Paul McCartney, just like Joffrey, gone through a couple of suitors.
True story.
So last week, I named Senator John McCain. After I said that, a couple of terrible things came out about John McCain. You know, we hope his health is going well. But Paul McCartney, who I am going to hope is in perfect health, I don't hope he's not getting my Joffrey of the Week curse. Sir Paul McCartney, Sir Joffrey Baratheon, my Joffrey of the Week.
Oh, excellent. That was excellent. All right. Well, God knows when it will be or how it will be, but we will talk to you next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.
Again.